putting a price on carbon emissions, battling climate change, and fixing flood insurance. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Should there be a financial cost to put carbon into the atmosphere? There's a federal legislation proposed that would put a fee on carbon emissions. It has support among some in Florida's congressional delegation. Two congressmen, a Democrat and Republican, will join us to talk about their effort to charge money to put carbon in the air in an effort to fight climate change. Now, as local governments have taken steps to fight the impacts of climate change, like raising roads and building seawalls, what will a new Congress do? And the National Flood Insurance Program is due to expire just before midnight Saturday, unless Congress acts. So what could that mean in low-lying South Florida? Your phone calls coming up next on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio in South Florida. Three Florida lawmakers want to put a price on carbon dioxide emissions. They've introduced legislation called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. The idea is to charge a fee, $15 per metric ton of CO2 produced by oil refineries and coal producers. The fee would then increase by $10 a year. Now, it is a carbon fee. It's different than a carbon tax. The money from this proposed carbon fee would be given back to taxpayers in kind of a dividend to offset the potential increased costs of fossil fuels to consumers. The bill aims to decrease total carbon emissions by 33% in a decade. By 2050, it hopes to cut them by 90%, and it has bipartisan sponsorship. So, do you support putting a price on carbon emissions? That's our question as we begin the South Florida Roundup this hour. Stephanie in South Florida wrote us that I'm in favor of taxing carbon emissions. We need to incentivize positive environmental decision-making at both the individual and corporate levels if we are to have any chance of avoiding catastrophic climate change. A text came in from a caller in 305 area code. I'm in favor of it, but it has to be gradual over several years. Sean wrote us, no dividends should be given. We all need to suffer for our sins against this planet in order to accept our penance and our salvation. Science is at hand, Sean writes. Here is Lancelot Rivas. He lives in Forest Lakes in southwest Miami-Dade.
I am against the current carbon tax proposal because I don't believe it will do enough to reverse CO2 emissions sufficiently to combat man-made climate change. Furthermore, I am skeptical that the money collected will go to those who need it.
So call us your thoughts. A price on carbon. Do you support that? Is that the beginning of a possible federal government response to climate change and the threat that it poses throughout Florida? 800-743-WLRN is our phone number. 800-743-WLRN is our phone number. 800-743-9576. The Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, and our news partner, the Miami Herald, with reporting from WLRN, have teamed up to address sea level rise and other environmental issues. You can find all that coverage online at theinvadingsea.com. Our panel of editors is back with us. Rosemary O'Hara from the Sun Sentinel. Tom O'Hara is the theinvadingsea.com editor. And Howard Goodman is on the editorial board with the Palm Beach Post. To all three of you, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Happy to be here.
Joining us from NPR in Washington, D.C., two of the Florida representatives behind this carbon fee effort, Congressman Francis Rooney, representing parts of Southwest Florida. Great to have you along, Congressman. And Congressman Ted Deutsch, whose district stretches along the coast from Broward County and then into southern Palm Beach County. Representative Deutsch, welcome back to WLRN. Representative Deutsch, let me begin with you. If successful with this legislation, what does that mean for an electricity consumer in South Florida who consumes electricity to cool their home for probably 11 and a half months out of the year?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us both on. And we can talk about that individual consumer. I just want to back out for one second, Tom, which is the fact that this is the first time in a decade that Republicans and Democrats have come together to address climate change, and that we're doing this at a time when day after day, report after report reminds us how urgent it is. The headlines just yesterday were dominated by another story about carbon dioxide reaching the highest levels on record. Emissions grew at 1.6% in 2017 and expected to grow by 2.7% in 2018. So something has to happen. The impact on our GDP will be in excess of 10% by 2100 if we don't act. So that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. The impact on consumers is the important piece of this, because this is an effort that will impose a fee on the polluters, it will incentivize changes in their behavior. They will pay for the carbon that they emit, and that money ultimately will be 100% of the net revenue that comes in. That's important to point out, will be rebated back to the consumers, American families all across the country. That's what makes this different. That's why we're so hopeful that we can actually start to move this forward.
Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post.
Oh, hi, Congressman. What I'm wondering is how that rebate would work. Would it get subsumed into someone's income tax so they maybe don't notice that they're getting this benefit, or would it come in separate payments that people would see, and would it be distributed equally across the board, or would somehow people be prorated for the amount of energy they use?
Sure. The Department of Treasury will ultimately determine exactly the way that this gets back to consumers. We believe that they're the most appropriate part of the government to do that, given the interaction with Americans over their taxes. And this will go back to all families across the country. And it's just going to be based on who lives in the household, not based on how much they earn.
Congressman Rooney, there's a cap, though, on a household of four, right? Under this legislation? In other words,
there was one version of that. But all of us who are involved in it felt it would be better to leave it open-ended and not be put in a position of affecting families when what we're really trying to do is affect pollution.
Gotcha. And so describe that here, because if the emitters of carbon are charged this fee, they pass that on to consumers, and then consumers get a rebate or some kind of dividend check. How does that go to actually constricting emissions into the atmosphere? If the fee is assessed, paid by consumers are refunded it. Is there really a financial cost that somebody is bearing?
Well, you want me to answer that?
Yes, please, Congressman.
That's the genius of Congressman Deutsch's approach right here, and why I hopped on it enthusiastically is the people that need to be disincentivized get disincentivized because of the carbon tax or carbon fee, and then the American people who are going to may have a change in their gasoline prices also get this credit, so they remain in the same position they would have been otherwise.
But what's
the
disincentive?
The right people pay the price.
Where's the disincentive if the fee is passed along to the consumers who then get rebated the money?
Well, it's going to make natural gas look a lot cheaper than coal, and coal is the ultimate enemy in this. That's the first enemy. And if we could, part of my goal in supporting all of these carbon fee initiatives is to show the true relative value of different fuels and focus on driving the market towards the cleanest ones.
Yeah, really? Tom, it's Ted Deutsch. If I could just chime in for a second on that too, the idea is to change the behavior. We're going to change behavior of polluters because they're going to have to pay the tax, and ultimately, it's going to cause consumers to look, even though they're going to be receiving these rebates. I think it's based on the analysis we've seen, and certainly if you think about it, someone who's going to see the cost go up a bit, knowing that they're going to get money back at the end of the year, isn't going to prevent them from also trying to reduce their costs along the way. So it really has that positive impact on both sides.
I might add one thing, if I might. You know, that first question was about a utility payer in Florida. This is one more instance where our great state, being one of the very first states to get off of coal-fired electricity generation entirely, would relatively benefit better by this because we don't have a bunch of dirty coal to price up on the carbon.
Yeah, that's true. FPL, which is the predominant electricity provider, has transitioned into more natural gas. Is natural gas covered under this legislation?
Sure, but it's a lot cleaner, so the tax is not going to be as onerous on natural gas as it would be on benzene, ethylene, bunkers, and certainly coal.
Let me remind folks, you can join the conversation here as we're talking to two congressmen from South Florida. That was Francis Rooney. He was from Southwest Florida. Ted Deutsch is along with us as well from Broward and Palm Beach County. Representative Deutsch, a Democrat. Representative Rooney, a Republican. Both of them teaming up for this carbon fee legislation in Congress, 800-743-743. 800-743-9576. Again, that phone number, 800-743-WLRN. We're joined here by our Invading Sea panel of opinion page writers and editors, including Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel.
Thanks, Tom. And I have a question, but I first want to start by congratulating you both for offering an idea that sounds workable, one that provides incentives to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and do something about what's happening to our climate, which, of course, we're experiencing in South Florida with rising sea levels. So, you know, way to go. I guess my question, though, gets at what the political landscape there looks like, because it was only in July that the U.S. House took a vote and to not have, you know, any kind of carbon tax. It was a tax in that case, to not go there. And applause to you two, especially Ted and you two, Francis, if I may call you that, for being part of forming and being part of this Climate Solutions Caucus. And yet members of that Climate Solutions Caucus left the caucus to vote with those who don't want something done about putting a price on carbon. So what makes you confident, or just describe the landscape, if you would, for why this stands any chance of passage if it does?
Well, I'll take that first. And thanks for the kind words, Rosemary. And I would extend my appreciation, our appreciation also, for this collaborative effort to focus on sea level rise and climate change that all of you are engaged in. It's interesting when you talk about people who left the Climate Solutions Caucus and voted to oppose any measure like this. I think first I would point out that a good number of those members of Congress are also getting ready to leave the United States Congress. One of the things that's changed is there is a growing number. There will be a majority in Congress, in the House, certainly, that understands the importance of tackling climate change. Politically, I think that's important. But what our teaming up here, I think, will remind our colleagues is that where we live, and frankly, this is true not just in South Florida, but around the country, businesses understand the threat that climate change poses to them and to our economy. And scientists understand the threat that it poses. And local government officials, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, also share the commitment to taking action. So I think really what we're doing is reflecting what's already happening around the country. We'll have a new majority that will focus on this. And I think we'll have the opportunity to bring more Democrats and Republicans together around ways to tackle the ongoing and urgent threat of climate change.
Tom O'Hara is our editor at the Invading Sea Project. Tom?
Gentlemen, this is going to put coal out of business even quicker than it is already going out of business. And I'm just wondering politically, since we have a president who's trying to restore the coal business, you know, how politically are you going to navigate, you know, the powerful coal industry?
Well, you know, all these kind of ideas take time to germinate. And this is an initial salvo of bipartisan effort to bring attention to the need to disincentivize coal and to focus on the true cost of carbon and pollution in our environment. And if it gets done now, great. If it doesn't get done now, we're going to keep pounding along until it does get done. And I think that, as Congressman Deutsch correctly stated, this is a much more broad coalition than sometimes the media portrays. I know a lot of CEOs. I'm a business person. They're all for a carbon fee. Okay, there's a group of many CEOs led by Mel Martinez and Ed Rust from State Farm and Glenn Hubbard from Bush's Council of Economic Advisors that's called the Alliance for Climate Solutions that's pushing for a slightly different use of the money but the same type of fee. So it's a broad-based coalition.
Your phone call is coming up in a matter of moments here. Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post.
Yeah, just to follow up on the political obstacles you face, Washington State voted down a proposal for a carbon tax after the fossil fuel industry fought it with a $31 million campaign. where is the muscle going to come from to get the, and if it can't pass in Ecotopia in Washington State, where's it going to pass? So where is the political muscle going to come from to stand up to the very powerful forces that want things to stay the way they are?
Well, first of all, you're right to ask the question. In Washington, as you point out, there were tens of millions of dollars that were spent, much of it toward the end, primarily on misinformation that helped cause the outcome that they had. The difference between, first of all, the difference between their bill and ours is that that effort would have collected the carbon fee, and then it would have been used by the government in Washington. That's an easier attack, though I may find lots of ways that the government could spend the money from a climate fee. I think we could invest in a whole range of ways that would spur the both economic growth and in ways that can combat climate change. That would be important to me, but it's a lot harder to argue against a plan that simply imposes the cost on the polluters and then returns those fees to the American people. That's a huge difference here. That and the fact that our headlines are dominated now on a weekly, if not daily basis, by more reports of the threats of climate change and by the urgency brought about by more intense storms and sea level rise and worse droughts and worse fires.
Well, let's hear from South Floridians here. Pardon the interruption, Congressman Rooney. We've got a lot of phone calls, a lot of texts coming in. Angel from 330 area code, definitely in favor of this, but the money should go towards improving public transportation. Enid from 561 in favor, but would like the legislation to offer incentives for alternative energy. And then another text message in from 305, born in Miami. What do you think? All right, your calls, 800-743-9576. In Broward County, we'll begin the phone calls in Pembroke Pines. Pat, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
How are we doing? Listen, my question is this. We all live on a budget in one form or another. When you raise the price on one thing, if your income doesn't go up, I've got to cut somewhere else. So what's going to happen? You're building in a system that's going to absolutely crash the economy over time. There's just no other way around it. I have never quite understood. Every time we have a problem like this in this country, the first thing we want to do is raise the price on it so we hammer everybody. There's got to be other ways around this thing that don't include taxing people.
Let's put it to the representatives. Representative Rooney, how about Pat's critique there?
Well, first of all, the Ernst & Young did a study here just recently of the impact of a carbon fee, and they found that over a period of time, it would very quickly become revenue positive, as much as $5,500 a household in Florida, because of the economic damage that will be foregone and because of the increased opportunities in new businesses. And we'll be glad to get you that study. It was commissioned by the Alliance for Climate Solutions, a bunch of CEOs.
So maybe a net positive for Floridians, but what about the rest of the country?
Well, no, it's net positive for a lot of people, particularly in forestalling some of the economic damage that stronger storms and rising sea levels will do. I mean, the people in New Jersey are just as concerned about rising sea levels as we are in Florida.
Yeah, certainly true. All right, yeah. Jeff in Fort Lauderdale, also in Broward County. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the radio.
Yes. Hi. I would just like to comment that how important this bill is, because it seems like the best chance we have of heading off the reports of climate pending crisis in a timely manner, because we have support from Republicans. Thank you, all of you, for being on the show and for this being broadcast. And I would just like to comment that, you know, that the bill to me looks like it's good for people, it's good for the economy, it's good for jobs, it's good for the planet. And for people that are worried about the tax, we all need to support this. If you consider the fact that everybody's going to be getting a rebate, regardless of how much fuel you use, it'll incentivize you to cut back, to get a more fuel-efficient vehicle, to cut back on your use of fossil fuels. You're still going to be getting the same amount of money in your pocket. That's going to stimulate the economy.
Jeff from Fort Lauderdale, thanks for sharing your thoughts there. Back to this bipartisanship here for both Congressman Rooney and Deutsch, and Rosemary alluded to this a little bit, and so did Howard, the political muscle here. With Democrats coming into control for the U.S. House, Republicans remaining control in the U.S. Senate. Representative Deutsch, what does that mean for hearings and for the process that's going to be involved for this piece of legislation in January?
Well, it means that there is a majority in the House that's going to take up the issue of climate change in the urgent way that we should address it. And my hope and expectation is that will include a whole range of hearings on ways that we can address climate change. And given that this is the one bipartisan effort that takes on climate change, I'm going to work awfully hard to make sure that we have a hearing on it and to make sure that we'll get to share some of what we've been saying here, but also to bring in the experts who can speak to the economic benefits of an approach like this, the scientists who can speak to the environmental benefits to an approach like this, so that everyone can understand why this is the right approach and why doing it in a bipartisan manner is so critical.
Congressman,
you know, can I make one comment? You mentioned about the political headwinds in the current political environment, but over the long run, the cohorts of voters, which are growing, seem to line up more and more solidly behind dealing responsibly with our environment and climate change. And so you talk about young people, you talk about young married couples, like I got a couple of them in my family, you talk about suburban moms, they are the ones that are going to be driving the future politics of this issue.
I'm just going to add one point to follow up on that to give you a great example. As you know, the movement that sprung out of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas tragedy has really led to this political awakening among young people in South Florida and around the country. And I'm getting texts now on a regular basis from a lot of those same activists who became energized around the issue of gun safety, and they continue to focus on that. But they are also asking about climate change and how can we urgently take on this issue because it affects them and their futures. They know it, and their voice is going to be critical as well.
I guess I'm curious to know where you see the resistance. Where you see the resistance? Obviously, the coal industry, but will it be big oil? Will it be power companies? Will it be the U.S. Chamber of Commerce? Will it be your fellow members? Because you get the sense that there still are a lot of people in Washington who do not believe in climate change or in man-made climate change. It wasn't so long ago that the president said something about, you know, the weather's cold, you know, what happened to that global warming? So where do you see who's going to be, now that you've introduced this, where do you see the who's lining up in opposition?
Well, having leaned forward hard on banning offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and in the east coast of Florida and in these climate change and sea level rise initiatives, I've seen the power of the energy industry, and particularly the coal industry, firsthand. And I think we're going to have a lot of fortitude and unison to call them out and take them on at every step. I don't think it's a task that's worth shrinking from, and I think it's a bipartisan task because our health and our environment is a bipartisan issue.
We got a lot more phone calls, a lot more text to get to here. We are with two Florida representatives in the United States House of Representatives with us, both of them co-sponsoring a proposed carbon fee on CO2 emissions in the United States. That was just the Republican representative from Southwest Florida, Francis Rooney. He's right across Alligator Alley from us here in Southeast Florida. Representative Ted Deutsch also along with us, Democrat representing parts of Broward and Palm Beach counties. The editors and writers for the Invading Sea Project with us, Tom O'Hara is the Invading Sea editor, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post. I'm Tom Hudson. Your phone calls still welcome, 800-743-9576, as the Florida Roundup will continue after this. climate change in Congress today on the South Florida Roundup. Thanks for joining us here on WLRN and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson. Representative Ted Deutsch, Democrat from Broward and Palm Beach County, is along with us, as is Republican Representative Francis Rooney, representing parts of Southwest Florida. They are with us from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Just a quick hop and skip and jump, perhaps a walk on a chilly day there from Capitol Hill. We don't know. But Tom O'Hara is the editor of the Invading Sea Project that we're part of. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, also part of that, and Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post, part of that as well. Lots of phone calls, some texts here as well, as we talk about the effort, the bipartisan proposal to put a fee on carbon emissions in the United States as a way to begin to address climate change. Text from 786, I think they should impose this fee on the auto industry as well as other vehicle manufacturers instead of individual consumers. Now, Representative Rooney, this is not a fee on individual consumers, but why not include the auto industry and other vehicle manufacturers on this as opposed to just the power companies, essentially?
Well, I think one of the genius, more ingenious aspects of this proposal is its simplicity, that it focuses strictly on the people that produce carbon-laden energy resources, that filters all through the rest of the economy, through car dealers, through tractor builders, through airplane makers, through grocery stores, et cetera, et cetera.
Tom O'Hara?
Yeah, I'm interested in some of the nuts and bolts of this. How many companies are actually going to pay this fee, roughly? Someone's done an analysis. I read this Kaufman study. They're talking about 1,200 to 1,500 companies. Does that sound right?
I'm looking for the same number, but go on with the question.
Well, okay. I was just curious. And it's supposed to generate $80 billion in the first year. Is that what I read? Is that correct? And then you're going to redistribute $80 billion through the Department of Treasury? And how much is that going to cost to manage that, I wonder?
Well, that piece is going to be no more than 2% of what's collected. So at least 98%. At least 98% of all of the money being paid by the polluters is going to be sent directly back to consumers, to American families.
Okay. All right. So 98% goes back. And then the question is, the argument here is that it's going to cause the oil companies and coal companies to innovate. Explain that. Well, what's the motivation for those people if they can just pass on the costs? And then the consumers get the money back. What's going to cause them to innovate?
See, that's one of the often encountered fallacies about static analyses. Because when people have something, a tax put on them or a regulatory regime put on them, they will tend to figure out how to minimize the impact of that for them. And a lot of our greatest innovations in the economy have come from companies figuring out how to deal with something like this. And I think you'll see cleaner fuels. I think you'll continue to see cleaner fuels. I think the CAFE standards in California stimulated cleaner fuels. And you'll see the end of coal, all of which is really healthy for our air and our water.
Okay, and there's no provision in this thing to take care of the 50,000 coal miners. I mean, we seem to be obsessed with the 50,000 coal miners in the United States. They're just going to have to find other work. Is that pretty much the bottom line here?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think our economy has always been for 40 years in a state of reaction, mutation, and change, and people have had to adapt with it and go to new industries and new locations, and I don't think they should be any different.
Howard Goodman. Yeah,
I would just add, Ted. I would just add though that we can't continue to refuse to tackle climate change in the name of certain people in our country when everyone in our country and around the globe is impacted by climate change. That said, we ought to have a conversation. We should be talking about people whose livelihoods will be impacted by taking on climate change. But that's part of a broader conversation that our bill specifically does not address. There are lots of things that we ought to be talking about in addition to a carbon fee. We ought to be talking about investing in renewable energy. We ought to be talking about making sure that as we focus on infrastructure, that resiliency is part of that focus. We have to talk about modernizing the grid. All of these are part of this broader conversation, but this step will be a dramatic one in curbing climate change.
Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post.
In fact, my question is, how dramatic? The UN calculations are that unless the planet takes great steps to keep the temperature from rising 1.5 or 2 degrees centigrade over the next century or half century, whatever the calculations are, we're in for a really rough time. Right now, we're going in the wrong, the last few years have been going in the wrong direction. How much will this measure contribute to making helping the U.S. make its part of that goal?
Well, you know, the IPCC and the recently released executive branch study give like two or three different ranges of temperature increase projected out into around 2050, and I think that this measures like this can keep us on the lower end of that curve, even below the Paris goals.
Yeah, it exceeds the commitments made under the Paris Climate Agreement, and it exceeds by three times the Clean Power Plan reductions. It would be quite dramatic.
Congressman, I got one more question. I mean, one of the arguments that you always hear is that even if the United States takes these dramatic steps, we still have China and India and everybody else burning more fossil fuels, particularly coal. And, that's part of the argument in France about the yellow jackets and so forth. France produces 4% of the emissions, and, why should, if I'm a rural person in France, have to pay $6 a gallon for gasoline? So what do you say when, people say, well, the United States can't solve this problem alone?
Well, that's true in principle, and ultimately I think we do need some global coordination about this. But one of the most ingenious aspects of Congressman Deutsch's proposal is it puts a tax on imports and exports, which will drive a lot of other countries to put their own carbon tax on
imports
rather
and exports,
than letting us collect their money.
Imports and exports of carbon emitting fuels?
Products.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, great. We got a lot of phone calls, some text messages to get to. Let me read a couple of these. David from 352 area code, I'm in favor of it. Our economy increasingly only understands quarterly profits and losses, so we need a way to have the invisible hand guide us towards carbon neutral or carbon negative energy sources. Jason from 218, they are abusing the environment and pay nothing to make billions in profits. They don't need to raise prices. And 561 text, it's a start. Why not offer more subsidies for homeowners to install solar panels? Sunrise and Raul has been very patient in Broward County. Go ahead, Raul. You're on the radio.
Yes. My question is, what is it to stop after the incentives go away, the companies to continue charging the residents?
So any sunset provision about these carbon fees, representatives?
Well, one thing about it, you know, the free market does work. If these fees are put in place and higher carbon is adversely affected more than medium carbon and lower carbon fuels, the lower carbon fuels are going to be advantaged in the marketplace. And that's exactly what we need to have happen.
But I guess Raul's question is there a sunset provision in this legislation that this carbon fee is in place for 5 years or 7 years? We've seen a lot of tax legislation recently be passed with sunset provisions for certain pieces of that.
Sure. Just two responses to that. First, when the emissions targets are met, yes, the fee sunsets because the economy will have changed, the production will have changed, and we will have succeeded what we tried to accomplish under this bill. But the other piece that is related to that is that we also take a look at what happens if it doesn't work as planned, if the companies aren't meeting the goals, and if the carbon isn't being reduced 10 years in, if that's not the case, then all of the regulations to require that those be met will be reimposed. So it works on both sides. There is an incentive to do it, to meet those goals, and at the same time, if those goals aren't met, then they'll be subject to tougher regulations to make sure that they are.
Let's say hello to Chris in Miami. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the radio.
Hi. Great. Well, First of all, my question is, Germany, which has the highest percentage of renewables, pays 32.7 cents per kilowatt hour. The United States, we pay 9 cents. What you're directly doing is imposing a tax on American consumers. And while you propose to redistribute it, often government programs don't do that. Secondly, if you're going to try to push a program such as this, well, the factual basis on it needs to be much more solid than the IPCC report. Third point is that the IPCC report concluded that there were no intensification of storms. Repeating that is just false, even from the IPCC report.
Congressman, you would like to respond to Chris?
I would say I just finished reading for the second time the fourth National Climate Assessment, and they make it very clear that they expect not necessarily more storms because of climate change, but more intense storms for the storms that are there because of the extra energy in the water and in the air. And I think people in Florida are starting to realize that when you look at what happened with Hurricane Michael.
Rosemary O'Hara, go ahead.
Well, I guess I'd like to ask, so this legislation deals with trying to limit further exacerbating climate change, but at the same time, there's so much carbon already up there, and there's that warming is occurring, and we are seeing the impacts of that warming through sea level rise, primarily in South Florida, plus these stronger storms. So my question is about, okay, so then, yeah, try to keep the problem from getting worse, but how are we going to deal with the water that's coming our way? South Florida has, you know, the flood control system down here is 50 to 70 years old, and we... And some of these days, the water is at the gate. I mean, it is brimming at the lip. And our local counties are saying we need authorization for a study on how to replumb our drainage system that, you know, drained the Everglades all those years ago. And the Northeast got authorization for a study after Superstorm Sandy, and we have all of these problems down here, and we still aren't looking at how are we going to fix the drainage to help get rid of the water that's coming our way and seawalls on the intercoastal. So at the same time, we deal with trying to keep the problem from getting worse. What are we going to do about fixing, hardening ourselves for the water coming our way?
Yeah, Rosemary, we've had – I appreciate the question. We have to focus on our infrastructure and on resiliency and on addressing the very real and current threat that sea level rise poses. And we've all experienced it in South Florida. This isn't something that we have to worry about in 10 years or 20 years. I'm not familiar with the study that you referred to, but – we'll talk off air, frankly, so we can address that. But I would say there is a real focus by the House, the Senate, and the President on infrastructure. There was a commitment by the President when he was campaigning to make investments in infrastructure around the country. What you describe, the types of issues that we face as a result of climate change, need to be part of any infrastructure deal that Congress can work out. We can't simply keep making the same investments without acknowledging why our infrastructure has to be different and modernized as a result of climate change.
If I might jump in here for 1 second, your point's very well taken. But first of all, we have got to get a handle on this before it gets dramatically worse. The difference between the RCP 4.5, which is Paris, and RCP 8.5, which is business as usual, is going from 1 to 2 feet rise, which what we have now, to 5 to 6 feet rise, which would be catastrophic. But given that, what I've been working on hard is to get money to build out the Everglades restoration projects and send more Lake Okeechobee water south into the marshes. That's important to avoid the discharges that create pollution, but it's also important to answer your question to drive salt water back and preserve the mangrove barriers as we see rising sea levels over time.
While we are talking about water, let's talk about flood insurance in Florida. The deadline is approaching quickly, 11:59 p.m. Friday night tonight. We will talk about flood insurance. Do you have flood insurance on your home? Is your policy expiring soon? You worried about being able to renew it? 305-953-800-743-9576. The South Florida Roundup will continue after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio in South Florida. Talking with our Invading Sea panel of columnists and editors and editorial writers throughout South Florida, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Tom O'Hara is our InvadingSea.com editor. And Howard Goodman is on the editorial page staff with the Palm Beach Post. We are joined with two representatives from South Florida, representing districts where flooding is certainly a concern in Florida. Florida is the biggest state with the most flood insurance policies from the National Flood Insurance Program. That program needs to be reauthorized by Congress by 11:59 p.m. tonight on this Friday night for it to continue. Democrat Congressman Ted Deutsch, district includes Broward and Palm Beach counties, butts up against the Everglades. And our neighbors in Southwest Florida, Congressman Republican Francis Rooney. Both the congressmen are with us from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. So let's start here, gentlemen. Is there a legislation on the table that is going to reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program so that it will not expire at 11:59 p.m. on this Friday night?
Hey, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, no. We've extended the program now to the 21st of December so that will expire. That's correct.
Right. And meantime, the Senate needs to act.
But I would like to say that this is a wholly unsatisfactory solution for us Floridians. And it's very frustrating to see areas of congressmen who from areas with high numbers of repetitive lost properties, basically Galveston to the Louisiana border, a lot of South Louisiana and things like that, where these people refuse to support modifications to the flood insurance, like some of the ones that were proposed this year in the Financial Services Committee that would make it more equitable. Florida's like 20 times donor versus what losses we have because we don't have very many repetitive lost properties.
Representative Rooney, let me just clarify, Congressman Deutsch, I'm sorry, because you pointed out that the legislation has been reauthorized till the 21st.
Yeah, and signed by the president.
And signed by the president. That happened today. So on this, that happened, 14 hours before this. So just so that I'm clear with our listeners, the National Flood Insurance Program has been reauthorized until December 21st of 2018. That would be the shortest day of the year, by the way, for anybody paying attention. But go ahead, Congressman Deutsch.
No. I just wanted to clarify that, and also to make the point, as Francis did, that this is, at some point we have to address the challenges with the flood insurance program. Part of that requires us to address the flood insurance program. We can't keep doing this weeks or even months at a time. Part of that also requires us to look long and hard at the resiliency issues we have been talking about, building code issues as well, the kinds of things that will encourage decision making that will lead to sound decisions rather than these ongoing emergencies that the flood insurance program winds up stepping in to pay for.
Howard Goodman with the Palm Beach Post.
Well, Congressman, I have a question about a number of newcomers to your chamber have been saying in the last couple of weeks that they would like to propose and push through a Green New Deal, expansive program that would talk about infrastructure. It would talk about putting people to work, installing solar panels, or making buildings green, or a whole slew of things. But a campaign to at once address unemployment, inequality, and climate change, on the scale of a government program that we haven't probably seen since with the Great Society or something. And I wonder how that strikes you when you're hearing these proposals.
Well, first, it reminds me that I think Francis and I are on are on to something here in proposing a piece of legislation that it's estimated will create over 2 million new jobs and will reassert America's global leadership on combating climate change. Beyond that, the Green New Deal, whatever you call it, and there are lots of goals in the Green New Deal, at least as I've seen it, the effort to try to wean us off of carbon-based fuels altogether and make massive investments in renewable energy. And again, however we describe it, we all have an interest in reducing carbon. And I'm excited about the enthusiasm that some of the new members around this issue that the new members have brought to the House that will force us to take serious action to address climate change. One of the best and most important ways to do that is, I believe, to pass bipartisan legislation so that we can get support in the House and Senate to reduce carbon output, and that's what we're trying to do.
Congressman Rudy, though, compare and contrast, though, the big idea that you and Congressman Deutsch are talking about here, certainly, in terms of putting a fee on carbon for the first time in the United States, certainly a big idea with long-dated impacts. And the difficulty of your colleagues in your chamber and the chamber across the hall, so to speak, to reauthorize flood insurance for more than just a matter of a few weeks.
Well, that's a couple of different issues boiled up in there. But one thing I would say is the Green New Deal, to me, brings even greater urgency on more free market-based, non-regulatory regime alternatives to a cap and trade or something like that. I don't think there's a better idea out there than the one that Congressman Deutsch has come up with and that I'm glad to be a co-sponsor on. And we need more of that kind of stuff before it gets so bad that we have a less efficient, more restrictive, and more burdensome regime imposed upon us.
I guess my question gets to the process here. Is if Congress has difficulty reauthorizing a plan that's been in place for a good number of years, however troubled it is, however many billions of dollars it is in debt, that so many Florida homeowners rely on for financial protection, the difficulty in getting some kind of reform or reauthorization for more than just, you know, a fortnight, what kind of hope does climate change legislation have, regardless of who holds a majority in Congress?
Well, that's a broader question of the efficacy of Congress that we're going to need more than 15 more minutes to talk about that.
Fair enough. And we only got about 3.5 left, Congressman.
I wanted to ask, though, there has to be reform of the flood insurance program. No question about it. And I have this assumption that whatever it is going to cost the homeowners in South Florida a considerable amount of money when it all gets sorted out. You can't keep bailing out the flood insurance program for $25 billion every couple of years. What kind of reforms are going to have to happen to make a national flood insurance work? Yeah, work.
You have to deal with repetitive loss properties. These properties that continually have damage, 5 damages in a short period of years, et cetera, that continue to have insurance claims. Some of these properties have had many times their fair market value in insurance claims over their history, and that's a real problem. And I'm going to be hopeful and optimistic that the new Congress is going to be able to be more effective in dealing with this than the last Congress has been.
But
the
old, I would just add that the idea that we would move to private markets, however, at a time when they're not equipped to do it, they cherry pick the best risks and it would drive up costs on everyone. That's not the way to do it. But national flood insurance, as we look to revise that, we also have to look at all of the things that go into decision making about where people build, what they build, and how they do it.
And it is the old Congress, the current Congress, that's going to have to deal with it. It is extended until just before midnight on December 21st, 2018.
Any bets that the can gets kicked down the road in the same
time? Will it get into 2019? Who knows? Yeah. Congressman, thank you so much for spending a full hour with us here on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Democrat Ted Deutsch from South Florida and Republican Francis Rooney from Southwest Florida. Gentlemen, thank you again for your time and have a wonderful holiday season.
Same to you all.
Thanks, same to you.
Tom O'Hara is our editor at theinvadingsea.com. Rosemary O'Hara, you can find her editorials at the Sun Sentinel. And Howard Goodman, you can find his work on the editorial page and online at the Palm Beach Post to the three of you. Thanks for joining us and have a great holiday season.
Thanks, Tom.
Same to you.
It is the South Florida Roundup this week, produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre, Teresa Frontato, our digital director, news director Terrence Shepard, editorial director Alicia Zuckerman, director of radio operations here at WLRN is Peter J. Meritz, and the WLRN director of radio programming and technical supervisor is Jason Zabka. Thanks so much for listening, for calling, for tweeting, and of course for supporting public media in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Have a wonderful and safe weekend.